welcome to Everybody Gay for But I'm a Cheerleader.
A queer exploration tonight of the classic lesbian film But I'm a Cheerleader.
With your host, Speak Pirate, aka Joanna. I'm here, I'm queer, and I couldn't really think of a quippy cheer to do for my intro.
And your other host, LCO123, aka Vina, a proud member of the Church of Natasha Lyonne.
Oh, great, great. So we had talked about doing an episode on But I'm a Cheerleader when the movie had its 20th anniversary, which I think was, we didn't do it because I think it was maybe around the time that you were concussed.
Oh, God. Yeah, it might have been.
It might have been. So we were stopped from doing it by concussion. But I am so excited that we get to talk about it tonight.
Me too. I'm really excited too. But I'm a Cheerleader might be my favorite gay film. I know that's a big statement, but it's, if it's not my favorite, it's definitely up there. What about for you?
Yeah, I mean, I love this movie with all my heart. I saw it when it first came out, and I really think, like, it's interesting to look at it now versus, like, when it first came out. Lesbian cinema at the turn of the century was really different than it is today. Like, there was not as much of it, and a lot of the movies that were out there, like Go Fish, took itself so seriously, or like Claire of the Moon, what a downer. Like, there just weren't a lot. Like, this is really the first, like, lesbian comedy that I can really ever remember seeing that was, like, legit funny. Like, what came out before? It's Bound, I guess, came out before this. And, like, that was, like, it was only playing in a few, like, my girlfriend at the time and I drove, like, 2 hours to see that movie. Whether you feel like Bound is worth driving 2 hours for, your mileage may vary. At the time, it seemed like it was.
Hey, yeah. I think Bound holds up. I think Bound is really convincing.
maybe that's what, now that PLL is done, we'll just, like, randomly be talking about, like, queer movies that are turning 20 years
old. Exactly. Queer movies of the 90s. Why not?
But yeah, I think that this movie is great. I think it's so funny and it has a happy ending. And, like, watching it now, it's like, wow, everything old is new again. Can you imagine?
Yeah, exactly. So maybe we can start. You said that you watched it when it first came out. Like, what was your journey with this movie? What's your history with it?
I mean, I always really liked it. I would see, like, back then, and like now too, like, I would see anything that was, like, queer related or, like, queer adjacent, particularly anything that had queer women as part of the story. And this was, like, it was so fun and so funny and so, yeah, like, flirty, and it got to have a happy ending, and just a really fun movie all the way around. And, like, watching it now, I also appreciate, like, that it is actually, like, for a movie from the 90s, it's pretty racially diverse as well in terms of the casting and stuff, which is very cool. And I remember at the time, this was, like, a big deal because RuPaul in 2000 was not, like, nearly as, like, stratospherically famous as RuPaul is now. But at that time, like, RuPaul was known exclusively as a drag queen. Like, you really did not see RuPaul out of drag. And then RuPaul was in this movie out of drag. And that was really something.
He's so funny in this movie, too.
So funny.
He's so good. Yeah, this is kind of, like, I think this is kind of a perfect movie. It's so, like, it's campy. It's funny, it's sweet, it's big-hearted. It, like, you can tell it was just made on a shoestring budget, and that's, like, part of what makes it so great. Like, I do not think this movie could be made today for a lot of reasons, one of them being that I just think that, like, I feel like in general there's, like, less room to be as, like, offensive in the way that this movie is offensive, but, like, I think this movie is offending the right people in a lot of ways. and making some really interesting points. I just don't think that you could make a comedy now that's a comedy about conversion therapy.
Well, okay, so one thing that I'll say about that is that I don't think this movie would be made today because they don't really make low budget comedies anymore.
Sure.
Like, that's sort of a rare thing. And also I feel like a queer movie about conversion therapy from like recent times would be like The Miseducation of Cameron Post, which yeah. like is about conversion therapy, but it's like a dark and deep and like, I guess ultimately hopeful at the end, but like, but yeah, you know, you would see something like that. I also feel like, the years that America has been living through since 2016, they've really sort of burned us out on satire. Like the difference between how many times have we seen a headline and thought it was probably an Onion headline and then like, oh no, that's real. How horrific. So I feel like the level of satire that this movie engages with is just maybe not something that like society has quite the same capacity for at this time.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And I think that like this is a really perfect sort of application of satire. It actually reminds me in some ways of one of the things we talked about when we spoke about Teenage Bounty Hunters, about how that's a show that has elements of satire, but is also like really, really authentic in this way. And obviously, But I'm a Cheerleader is more sort of exists in more of a kind of heightened dream world than Teenage Bounty Hunters. But I think that again, there is this authenticity that comes through kind of these shines through within the incredible, you know, campy satirical material.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree. I loved rewatching this movie, and I think it's so fun too, because at the time that the movie came out, like I remember it was really like panned by critics. Like no one who was writing reviews for like a major newspaper liked this movie. And one of the things that people were really like pretty ruthless about was the aesthetic of it. And I loved watching it today, having seen like all of the Barbie trailers that are coming out.
Yeah.
Because I just feel like, oh man, no, this was perfect. This aesthetic was exactly what it should have been.
And the aesthetic is part of it. Like I think that people didn't get the joke, or didn't get that the movie is in on the joke of like, it's supposed to be this weird, tacky, fake world, mm-hmm. because the whole point is that gender roles are like completely constructed in this way, you know? So I think that that's really great. I'm realizing, you know, we're almost 10 minutes in. Should we maybe explain what this movie is to people who have seen it?
I guess I just assume everyone has seen it, but that's true. A lot of people might not have. And if you haven't, oh my gosh, what a treat you're in for, because yes. This movie is fantastic. So this movie is the story of Megan, who is the titular cheerleader in the title of the movie, who her parents and friends stage an intervention for her because she has been displaying worrying signs of lesbianism, such as eating tofu, having pictures of women in her locker, and like really disliking kissing her boyfriend, who is like the disgustingness of the male tongue in this movie on this man. Whoa.
Yeah.
Out of sight.
So oh man.
Packed off to conversion therapy, where she meets a rogues gallery of other queers who are going through this program to try and de-queer to varying, i.e. no, levels of success.
Yeah, and chaos ensues. The director of the camp is played by Kathy Moriarty in this incredible drag queen-esque performance. She rules this camp with an iron fist, and a lot of the elements that could be just like really devastating. This movie leans into the ridiculousness of it to the point that it becomes funny. Like when one of the kids gets in trouble, they have to go sit in a pink dog house in solitary. And they have these electroshock buzzers for aversion therapy, and they use that when they're masturbating. And again, it's played in this way that's like equal parts funny and horrifying. One of my favorite little details with Mary is there's a scene where she's outside of the place, and it's all just pinks and blues and just like really bright colors, and all feels like very, very kind of fake and weird. It's like this kind of like cracked out, like Pee-wee Herman kind of like just bizarreness. And Mary has all of these fake flowers in her garden, and she's not watering the flowers, but she's spraying them with water and like wiping them clean. And her son is saying, you know, oh, the flowers look great, Mom. And it's just like, it's so weird. It's like this movie almost functions with like a level of like dream logic or something.
I was thinking that too. This is like, if this is like sort of what a hyper adrenalized reality might look like.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I have a question for you, which is always one of my questions when I watch this movie, which is Mary gay?
I am so surprised that you even asked that question, because I think the answer is most definitely yes. I think that everybody in this movie is gay. Perhaps you could read the character of Mary as someone who is so invested in trying to make everybody in the world straight because her son is gay. Mm-hmm. But I think that Mary definitely has a queer reading herself in the way, and you know, this is not always true, but in the way that some homophobes are so aggressively homophobic because they themselves are queer and they can't bring themselves to deal with that or to admit it. Yeah, so I mean, no one is more obsessed with gay sex than conservatives. No one thinks more about how people are being converted or lured mm-hmm. into gay sex than conservatives. I mean, you know how it is right now. Like, they think that if a child is like attending a drag queen story hour, they're just like a hair's breadth away from becoming gay. Like, all of the rigors of the heteropatriarchy are just powerless against like the sight of one man in a dress. Then it's all over. That's how powerful queerness is. So yes, yeah, I definitely read Mary as a queer character.
Yeah, no, that makes sense to me. That makes sense to me. And I mean, a character who is openly queer is, openly queer within the narrative, not within themselves, is Mike, played by RuPaul, who is the director of the boys' side of the camp. He is so funny in this role. It's an interesting mix of like actors who have gone on to be huge and actors who haven't really been in a lot, but are like great in this film. We have Natasha Lyonne as our lead. We have Clea DuVall as Graham, who is the bad girl who is, you know, really pretty much fine with the fact that she's gay. She just doesn't want to get caught. You have Melanie Lynskey as kind of like the goody two shoes. And then you have a number of other actors in, go ahead.
You have Michelle Williams.
She has a
throwaway part where she's just the captain of the cheerleading squad. But I saw her and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I didn't know who she was the first time I saw this movie. But there she is.
It's wild. And then you have a number of other actors who are all doing a great job in the roles as the other members of this camp. And, you know, this movie sort of improbably is actually like a romantic comedy, because there's this lovely little love story between Megan and Graham, and Natasha Lyonne and Clea DuVall have such fun chemistry together. I just, this movie is so great. What are like some favorite moments or favorite little details that really stick out for you?
Oh my gosh, there are so many. The disgusting tongue kissing of the boyfriend and how utterly unengaged with it Megan is. I made a note when I was watching it. Oh, look, it's Toby and Spencer making out in the truck.
I mean, you're not wrong.
But I love that part. I love that there's such a small moment, but I think it's Joel, who's one of the boys, who at one point says, "I can't wait to be straight. I've always wanted to be." And it's just like, you know, like that's it's a line that really just like encapsulates how ridiculous this whole endeavor that they're that they're part of is. So I like that. And I also really like when I think his character's name is Andre, who introduces himself as actor, dancer, homosexual. That's his intro. When he does not pass the course in straightness, and he's like really like he's crying and he's like, "I'm just not meant to be butch." And Joel is like trying to console him and saying like, "But you're so many other things. You're like sweet and smart and sexy." And he says, "Listen, if there's one thing I don't need, it's some fruit who just proved that he's straight telling me I'm sexy." And then he like kind of does a dramatic storming off and he calls them all liars. And for a movie that's like very campy and fun, like that's a moment like that. That's a moment where it's not really afraid to like reckon with what this is. I love that. I really love Andre's character. When I was watching it for this podcast, I like had a very specific memory of like the woman that I saw this movie with the first time, how much she really loved the very small moment when the Morgan Gordons, who run like a gay safe house nearby, who've defected from True Directions, they like send a flyer in via like a paper airplane and it lands by his feet and he picks it up and like the girl that he's sitting with says like, "What's that?" And he says, "Nothing, trash," and he puts it in his pocket. And I remember how hard she laughed at that and how funny she thought it was. It's a great movie. There are tons of little moments like that. What are some of your favorites?
Oh, I mean, those are all so great. All of the tasks that they have to do, I find so funny. You know, anytime like there's a moment where Mary is showing them a slideshow and it's supposed to be, you know, "Look at this perfect heterosexual family and look at how connected they are and how happy they are." And it's like this kind of like grotesquely like collaged picture of like a woman's body and a man's body and like different heads and they're like not looking at each other and they're like on opposite sides of the room. And this movie, like, I think does such an interesting job of portraying sort of the grimness of heterosexuality. I mean, one of the best, I think, running bits is the whole idea of the root. What's your root? What's the thing that made you gay? And they're just trying to come up with these random things. Graham's root is her mother wore pants
to get married. Root is I was born in France. So is France just a country of all homosexuals? Love that for them.
Oh, it's incredible. And then it's like when Megan tries to explain her route of like her mom was working and her dad was out of work and her parents get very defensive about that. And Mary's like, "Of course, your father was emasculated. Your mother was unmarried." Like, that's what happened. The moment when Megan and Graham are washing dishes, and the way that they're washing dishes is that they have this like bucket of soapy water and like what looks to be like maybe like a toothbrush with like a piece of cloth wrapped around it. And they're not even like rinsing, they're just like washing it in this gross tub and then like not even rinsing it and wiping it clean. It's such a gross way to wash dishes. And it's like, it could have even been something as simple as like, you know, they couldn't have like a, you know, they couldn't afford to like film at a sink or something. But it somehow works in this way of just being like so strange. But I think, you know, a lot of my favorite little moments are the moments between Megan and Graham. Like there's a moment early on when Graham kind of shares her story of how she ended up at this camp. And her story is that she got caught. And her whole thing is basically like, you are who you are. The trick is just to not get caught. And there's a moment where Megan kind of, because Megan is much more innocent going into this. And she doesn't want to be gay, but she also doesn't really see such a problem with it. And there's this great moment where she kind of reaches to sort of comfort Graham. And Graham kind of gives her this look and says, careful, I could report you for that. And it's just this, I think Clea DuVall does such a great job of grounding a lot of the emotions of this movie and a lot of the genuine kind of terror of this situation. Like she sort of feels like maybe the only character who isn't in a comedy in certain ways. I mean, I think she's very funny and I think she's great, but like she's probably playing things down the most in a way that I think is really effective. I also love their first kiss moment. They go out to this this club, this gay club called the Cocksucker, and they're all dancing. And Megan is watching Graham dance, and Graham is watching Megan dance. And they go outside, and Megan is very upset at seeing Graham dancing with somebody else. And she says, you know, she says, do what you want. And Graham says, you know, you want me to do what I want? You want me to do what I really want? And of course, what she really wants is to kiss Megan. And it's just, it's like heartbreaking and romantic and sweet all at once. And funny because we're like cutting back to like Andre, you know, like just serving on the dance floor. So it's, yeah, I think it's really lovely. It's a really lovely moment.
I wholeheartedly agree. I like everything about that scene. I also love that, like, what happens is a woman who is credited in the film as Lipstick Lesbian comes over and asks Megan to dance, and Megan says no, and then Graham is like, oh, what, you can't dance with a woman for like 2 seconds? So Graham actually never asks Megan to dance. Like, that's not like a risk that her character is gonna take.
Yeah.
But then when like Sinead drags Graham out on the dance floor, she goes. So I like that detail a lot in terms of like who Graham is and what her character is like.
Oh, I completely understand. And I think that the film does a really good job of building an intimacy between those two characters in not a lot of interactions. I mean, they kind of do the thing that a lot of movies do where there's like the developing a crush montage, I think it actually really works. Like you believe the connection forming between these two characters.
Oh, you totally do. And I'll also give you another proof that Mary is queer, as we're talking about Graham's character, and that is the moment in this film when Mary has brought them to wave protest signs in front of the Morgan Gordon home, and one of the like kind of stray queer youth that the Morgan Gordons have adopted is heading in, and he says, hey, I know I saw you at the Cocksucker the other night. And Graham picks up a rock and pelts him with it. I feel like, so we see that there is a path for if you're queer and you really need to hide that, what you do is you literally throw stones at the people who are openly gay, which I feel is kind of Mary's whole thing.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I think it's a really interesting moment, and it's the whole sort of subterfuge of them trying to kind of cover up what they have been doing is really, really interesting, I think, because Graham comes up with this idea that, oh, she has a crush on Joel as a way to kind of redirect attention. One of the things that's really fun about this movie is that the queers get to be horny. Like, this isn't just a movie about, like, who you fall in love with, which is important. But this is a movie about, like, who do you want to bone? And I'm using that in a gender-neutral sense. You know, what's, like, so fun is, like, it's not just, I mean, with Megan and Graham, you have actually a sex scene. But you also have, like, you know, the boys lusting after one another, and you have Sinead masturbating, and you have Megan masturbating. And, you know, I think that, like, you have the at the end, who is it?
Dolphin Clayton,
who just, you know, get into this, like, incredible, like, making out moment because they just can't keep their hands off of each other. I think it's so great.
I totally agree. I love that the movie, it allows them all that space. Hillary is a little horny for Jan. Like, we see her kind of feeling Jan up during the, all the girls are all doing all of these, like, very gender pressed things, such as, like, fitting wedding dresses and washing dishes and changing baby doll diapers and all this stuff, while the men are, like, trying to, like, learn how to fix a car and, you know, like, split wood and do all of this stuff. And you see the guys being super horny. Like, they're all really attracted to Rock, Mary's son, who is, like, roaming around the property shirtless all the time. And they're, like, really turned on by Mike, who's, like, under the car, who's, like, thrusting. It's like a really great teenage movie in that there's so much, like, there are so many hormones just floating around all over the screen.
Oh, totally. Totally. And that reminds me of one of my other small, I just forgot to mention it, but one of my other small favorite visual jokes, which is when the guys are, like, basically, like, playing army, and there's that giant cutout that's a soldier standing up, holding his gun down, with another soldier kneeling in front of him, that very much looks like a blowjob is about to go down. It's so funny because it's like one of the things that this movie plays with in such a fun way is this idea of, like, it's so ridiculously trying to be heterosexual and so fixated on homosexuality that it ends up being the gayest thing ever, you know? Yeah. And that, like, also the way that it's not just about, you know, being gay or being straight, but just the application of gender roles and the ridiculousness of, like, how these gender roles, like, really don't mean anything.
Well, and it's very much the same thing. Like, when I said, like, everything old is new again, like, the homophobia that existed in the world at this time is still out there. Right now, a lot of it is being directed at trans people, but there's also, like, you know, this movie is like, you know, at one point they keep talking about how Megan is being influenced into homosexuality by looking at gay iconography. She has a Melissa Etheridge poster and stuff like that. And, like, all the groomer talk that you hear today, like, that's exactly what this is. And it's this situation where people want you to believe that, like, for example, they feel like gender is, like, ingrained and immutable. But at the same time, we have to rigidly force you to adhere to all of these structures of it, or else the whole system will fall apart. And it's just as ridiculous now as it was back then.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, this movie leans so hard into that aesthetic. And, like, really kind of stares that idea in the face in a way that is so, like, entertaining, but also, like, I think deeply true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's great. It's so great.
One thing that I, like, from the moment of, like, the first thing you see in this movie is cheerleading, because cheerleading is a big part of Megan's identity. And I felt like, oh, man. You know, another great thing about this movie is that it kind of follows, like, the tradition of queer cheerleading films, like the unfortunately subtextually only queer Bring It On, which is also another one of my favorite movies from this era. And, of course, starring Faith from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, yeah, one of my favorite.
And Gabrielle Union. Yeah, I mean, just a fantastic, fantastic film.
Yeah. 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 It's, I really love that the cheerleading in this movie, like, it's something that Graham makes fun of Megan for early on, and then eventually gets that this is something that matters to Megan and says, you know, I would love to hear you cheer or see you cheer. And then it ends up being the way that Megan gets Graham back in the end. It's really cool because it's like, I think a lesser movie or a movie that had less respect for Megan as a character would treat the cheerleading as like, oh, it's just this dumb airhead thing that she's doing to fit in with the other girls. But this movie actually respects that she can be a cheerleader and a lesbian, and you know, that there's not one way to be a lesbian. And I think that that's, and you even kind of see that with the Jan character, who is like, you know, has this amazing speech at the end where she's like, I'm not gay. Like, I'm straight. And everybody is like, who are you fooling? Because like, she has this very butch presentation, and it's like, that's a character who like, they've probably got some gender stuff going on, but maybe they are attracted to men, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's, yeah, I like that this movie gives space for a lot of different experiences.
Yeah, yeah, I would definitely co-sign that. Totally agree.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think of Megan and Graham's respective journeys? Because they kind of go sort of different ways throughout. They kind of switch perspectives in some ways a little bit throughout the course of the movie.
Well, you know, I don't think that you ever really see them switching perspectives, but I think Graham just digs in, because you also get some backstory that, like, Graham seems to have these really rich assholes for parents.
Yeah.
Who've kind of dropped her off here. And at one point, her dad storms out saying, like, you know, if you don't graduate from this place, then that's it. Like, no college, no car, no trust fund. Like, you get the sense that there's, like, a lot for her to lose. Megan has a lot to lose too, but it's not so much like money, car, college. It's more like the love and support of her family. Like, she did have a pretty supportive family. And then, like, as part of the conversion therapy, like, all the parents come in and say, like, you, if you don't succeed here, you can't come home, which is like a darker part that is like, it's still played for comedy, but like, when we see characters who are kicked out of True Directions or who have to leave True Directions, like, you don't know what's going to happen to them. Like, their parents have basically said they can't come home. So, you know, we see that some of them take refuge at the Morgan Gordon house. But like Andre, you don't know what happens to him.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. It's that's this way in which the movie sort of skirts around some of the darker implications of its premise, which I think is okay. I don't think that mm-hmm. we need to like have a, you know, an epilogue of like homeless gay teens or anything, but that was
it's like satirizing something that is like a super real problem.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I do love the inclusion of I love that Megan is the one that leaves and ends up going to sort of experience the safe house, because I think that Megan is the most naive coming into the movie, and she really has a chance to kind of really see like, oh, this is a real thing. This is really mm-hmm. hard. This is really painful. And like, how do I want to handle this within my own life? You know, I think that one could debate the whole, like, does Megan force Graham to come out? Does, you know, I mean, there's, you could really dig into this, to the script, and in a way that I don't know is really very useful in terms of like, is somebody forcing somebody else's hand here? I think it's a movie and they want to give us a happy ending, and Megan is providing an element of freedom there for Graham at the end.
Well, and I don't think you can really say like, is Megan forcing Graham to come out? Like, I think that like, I think that everybody who's at True Directions like has been outed to their family in some way, and it's just all about if they're going to like continue with this charade of pretending to be straight. But yeah, I really love the ending. I love that Graham runs off with her. I love that like it ends with them kissing in the back of a pickup truck, and then we get like a little credit scene of Megan's dad going to a PFLAG meeting. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's just the kind of cotton candy ending that you want from this film.
It is. I even love that, like, Graham is in that ridiculous, like latex pink dress.
Bridesmaid's outfit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And Graham is in that. And then Megan is in her cheerleading outfit. And it's just, the visual of that, the bright colors and everything as they're driving away in the sunset. It's a great ending.
Yes. Yes. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah. What are, do you feel like there are any PLL connections with this movie?
Ooh, what an interesting, well, I mean, I feel like the religious elements of it, are very like Nick McCullers is someone who kind of seems like he would have maybe liked to send Paige to a place like this.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of like, it's hard to say because Emily is such a, she's such a feminine, queer character, which, you know, is fine. I think that we could talk about like the gay bar scene from this movie versus like, the Rosebud. When Hannah goes to the gay bar, I feel like, man, when I saw the scene where they're walking into the gay bar, it really like took me back to like the time when like this type of gay bar existed, which I don't feel like it really does anymore, because you know, and we can talk about all the things that have led to the downfall of the gay bar, but I think a lot of it is that there are tons of other ways for gay people to meet now, whereas back then it was like a bar. Like that was what you did if you wanted to meet other gay people. That was where you had to go. So yeah, this type of like little neighborhood gay bar that exists there. Yeah. Oh man. So great.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that like, obviously it's a different thing, but I think that like the campiness of this in some ways of the camp reminds me a little bit of like the campiness of Radley, of like, you know, the nurses dressed like it's the 1970s, right? And like just the kind of sense of like, this is the most dramatic, extreme version of this thing, you know? Yeah, I think that's definitely in there.
Well, and just the idea of like when Megan says to her family, like, we've always kind of been this perfect greeting card family. And that makes me think of like the Hastings, for example,
sure,
who always want to like put a certain presentation out there to the world, that is then covering up the fact that you're going to say under these circumstances, you can't come home.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. 1,000%. Yeah. Yeah. It's very, like you said, everything old is new again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the questions that I asked you when we were talking about this is, if there was going to be a remake of this movie today, who would you cast? And
okay,
I would just like to kind of run down some of our choices on that.
Okay. So I want to tell you, I did a full cast for the entire cast.
I really tried. I couldn't come up with, I don't know that many young male queer actors, mm-hmm, apparently. So I feel like I really fell down there, but I do have a lot of suggestions for most of the roles.
Okay. Should we go through each character and we can say who we each picked?
Okay. So the star of, well, the perfectly cast star of this movie is Natasha Lyonne. And I think that Natasha Lyonne is so great in this role, because every character that she has ever played, I have always felt like had queer energy. And yet Natasha Lyonne has publicly stated that she is not queer herself. But so she's like perfect for this role of like a queer person. And you look at them and you're like, oh my gosh, of course she's queer. And then they're like, no. So yes, I feel like this role is really made for her.
Yeah, I think she's so great. Who would you cast in... Who would you recast?
Okay, to be the cheerleader, and to be a cheerleader who is discovering her sexuality, I am going to go with JoJo Siwa.
Oh, that's a great choice.
I think she'd be perfect.
I think she'd be perfect. Okay, I went in a very different direction.
Okay,
This actress is probably a little old for the role, but I think that she could hopefully be aged down enough. I picked Stephanie Hsu from Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh, okay. Okay. I like that. When you started talking about she's a little old, I thought you were going to, it's like, oh man, it would be so funny if you said Maya, the woman who played Maya, who's like now.
Oh, Funk Lawson.
Yes.
The forever teenager.
Okay. But yeah, I think that that would be a great choice as well.
Yes. Okay, so Clea DuVall's role, Graham Eaton, the sort of the bad girl with a heart of gold.
Okay, so you might have to tell me how to pronounce her name, but she is the young queer actress who she was Moana in the movie she sang songs. Ollie, I think is maybe how you say the name, or.
Yeah,
but you know, she was also in that queer movie with like some track and field running.
She was so great in that movie.
I think she would be a good Graham.
Yes, I'm embarrassed to say that I also do not know how to say her name, but she would be phenomenal. She was so fun in that movie.
Yeah, I'm gonna. It's like Ali apostrophe mark I, and then I think the last name is Carvalho or so. Yes, but that is the character, that is the actress that I would say for Graham.
She's wonderful. I said Jasmine Savoy Brown.
Ooh, nice.
Who, from Scream and from Yellow Jackets. I think that she'd be fun.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. Like Clea DuVall has that smile that just I can see her having that too. My runner up pick for Graham was Bella Ramsey from Game of Thrones.
I can definitely see that.
Yeah.
I can totally see that. So for Kathy Moriarty, I have to say I stole your pick for this. I think it was so, so good. Do you want to share it with us?
It's the only answer. Jinx Monsoon, 100,000% born to play this role in a remake of this film.
I mean, I really feel this movie won't get remade, but I really feel that if it was going to get remade, of course you have to cast a drag queen in that role.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You just do. It's the only choice.
It is the only choice. What about for the role of Mike?
I said Lil Nas X.
I think that's a great choice. I think that's a fabulous choice. I said, just because I think it would be very fun to see them interact, Ben de la Creme.
Oh, very nice. Very nice.
An out of drag Ben de la Creme.
Wow. Yeah, that would hold strong with the like RuPaul out of drag energy.
That's kind of what I was thinking. Did you cast Megan's parents? Because I did.
I did cast Megan's parents.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you, like, my idea of this movie is everyone in this movie is queer. So I went for queer actors wherever possible. I think that her dad should be Jesse Tyler Ferguson, known as Mitchell on Modern Family.
Yes.
And I think that Megan's mom should be Alison Brie.
Oh, fun. Oh, I love that. Alison Brie would be great.
My runner up for Megan's mom would be like Leisha Haley. But I think that Alison Brie gets my vote.
Okay. So for Megan's mom, she's not, to my knowledge, queer, but she is a queer icon. I have Sandra Oh.
Mm.
And then for Megan's father, I have B.D. Wong.
Nice. Nice.
Love B.D. Wong. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who do you have for Rock?
I have for Rock Vincent Rodriguez III, a.k.a. Josh Chan from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Oh, my God.
I think he would be so great.
He'd be so good. That's a great choice. Oh, my God. I love that choice. That'd be amazing. I have Andrew Rannells.
Oh, I love that too. I was thinking I would love to like fit him in somewhere, but I have to say, like, just all of the out gay actors that I could think of are like really too old to play teenagers. But I was like, could Andrew Rannells be one of them? Could he be Clayton?
I have to admit,
he's an adult. But
as I was casting this, I literally Googled the phrase Ryan Murphy's stable of gays. Yes. All right. So who do you have in the Melanie Lynskey role as Hillary?
Ooh, I have she played Rue in the Hunger Games, Amandla.
Oh, Amandla Stenberg?
Stenberg, yeah.
Yeah.
I have her as Hillary.
Great choice. Great choice. I have Beanie Feldstein.
Oh, okay. Again, I she was in Booksmart not that long ago. So yeah, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, all the ages are a bit all over the place.
It's true.
Who do you have for Lloyd Morgan Gordon and Larry Morgan Gordon.
Okay, so first of all, I think that these roles should be lesbians instead of like these bearish gay men. So all of my ideas for this couple running the Queer Safe House, it's all lesbians. And I have a bouquet of choices for you. I have
three
that I will share. And my first one, as I told you, is Ashley Benson and Cara Delevingne, because just think they would be so funny and so perfect in that. And who knows, maybe this is the film that could bring them back together. But I would also happily accept Janelle Monáe and Tessa Thompson in these roles.
Ooh.
Because I love Tessa Thompson and her kind of Valkyrie energy being brought to this. So I would love that too. And then my third choice would be Tig Notaro and Stephanie Allien. I don't know how to pronounce her last name, but her real life wife.
Oh, I love those choices. I love those choices. Those are all great. I went with Niecy Nash and Jessica Betts.
Oh my goodness. Well, they're perfect too. I think maybe there should be like a network.
Yes.
It could be like, because they talk about it being like the underground railroad for escaped queers. So I think there should be like a series of houses where we get to see all of those couples helping these queer youth on their path to freedom.
I would love that. I would love that. How about for Joel?
You know what? I don't have anybody. I could not think of a young queer. I was like, someone from Heartstopper maybe?
Yeah. I said, and I don't love this choice, but I said Ben Platt because he is gay and Jewish and nervous. I mean, we all saw how badly it went the last time Ben Platt tried to play a teenager in a movie. So I'm not necessarily advocating for that. But in a world where age is, you know, just a number, I'm going to say Ben Platt.
Yeah. Okay. Love that.
Do you have anybody for Clayton and Dolph?
I didn't have anybody for Clayton or Dolph, unfortunately.
Okay. So I went with two cast members from Pose, who I think would be very fun. Angel Bismarck Curiel and Dylan Burnside. I think that they would be pretty great.
Okay. I did have like maybe Andre.
Okay.
But I wasn't sure. I was like, I think that this would be, and I'm not actually like, I don't know if he's an out queer actor or not. But the guy who played Ezekiel in Teenage Bounty Hunters.
Oh, he is indeed queer.
I feel pretty strongly about that.
That's a great choice.
I feel like I would love to see him as one of the guys. I looked up how old he is, and he's like 33. So he's a little, but he was playing a teenager like as recently as 2020 when Teenage Bounty Hunters came out. So I felt like I would love to see him dancing around as Andre.
I love that. I love that. For Andre, I had Justice Smith, who I think more recently was in the Dungeons and Dragons movie, but he was great on Generation playing this really like fun flamboyant character. So I think he'd be really good.
Excellent.
Who did you have if you cast this person, who did you have for Jan?
I had Lachlan Watson as Jan.
Ooh, okay, cool. I had Kiersey Clemons as Jan.
Love that. Love that. Now here's one that I think, like, if there's one role that we might have both cast with the same person, it might be this.
Okay.
Who did you have for Sinead?
I had Liv Hewson.
Oh no, I had Jenna Ortega. I thought you were going to pick Jenna Ortega for that too.
Okay, great. Okay.
We might not. Then Jinx is the only one that we'll have had together because we talked about it in advance. But I thought that might be one where we would have the same answer.
Gotcha. What about for Jared, Megan's boyfriend?
I don't know any. Gosh, I. there was somebody that I was thinking of, and then I looked up how old they were, and I was like, oh, no, gross. Oh, I had thought about Vincent Rodriguez for Dolph, and then I was like, oh, no, he's too old for Dolph, but he could maybe be Rock. And there was somebody that I was thinking about for the boyfriend. And then I looked up how old they were, and they were like 40. And I was like, oh, no, that's not.
I have someone, and I think you're going to be like, this is a good choice.
Okay.
I have Mason Gooding.
Ooh, I do like that choice.
I think he, I mean, he's become like kind of the new bad boy with the heart of gold kind of guy. Mm. And I think he's really charismatic and fun, and I think he'd be fun in the role.
I love that. Oh, I think he would be. That is a really good choice.
Thank you. Thank you. Who do you have for Kimberly, if anybody?
I didn't get through casting the cheerleaders and I don't have anybody for Kimberly. Who do you have?
Okay, for Kimberly, just because I wanted to give her a role somewhere, and I was like, well, maybe this isn't a version where she gets to do more, I put Kiki Palmer.
Oh, okay. I actually was thinking that we could, instead of having it be like the captain of the cheer team, maybe it could be the coach of the cheer team, and in that case, I would make it Lindsay Lohan.
Oh, I love that. That's great. That's great. What about, do you have anybody for the lipstick lesbian character?
Okay, I was also thinking about Janelle Monáe for this role.
Gotcha.
But then I was like, I don't know. I kind of like that she's like this, like, beautiful kind of model-esque sort of person. And then I started thinking about, like, you know, Carly Kloss or Taylor Swift, and then I was like, no, Jermaine, you're going down the wrong path. So no, I did not cast anybody for the lipstick lesbian. Did you?
I cast Cara Delevingne for that role.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Yeah, if she's not running one of the gay safe houses, I think she would be fit. Or you know what? I'm gonna say maybe Demi Lovato.
Oh, I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Oh man. This is one where, like, I really hope our listeners will write in and tell us who you would cast in these roles.
Okay, now who do you have for Graham's awful parents?
Oh, I didn't cast them.
You didn't cast them. I have as her dad Billy Eichner, and as her stepmom Shay Mitchell.
Oh. That's good. I like that a lot. That's really good.
Well, okay, great. That was our super fun podcast recast of But I'm a Cheerleader.
Yes, yes, exactly. Oh my goodness. Well, do you have any more you want to talk about with this film?
I do want to say that one thing I recently learned as I just watched the director's cut and then I was reading an article about it, is that this film was originally given an NC-17 rating, which is absolutely banana pants wild, considering that, like, this is like a bubblegum pop rom-com, and the fact that it was just like, oh my goodness, two girls are going to have sex, egad!
Mm-hmm.
Wow, 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 wow.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. It's very interesting. I was talking about this with you before we started recording, but highly recommend that anybody check out the documentary. This film is not yet rated. It's a really fascinating documentary about the MPAA's rating system process. And they feature a whole section about But I'm a Cheerleader. When they're talking about the difference in the ways that queer sex scenes and straight sex scenes with essentially the same act are rated. And they talk about how this film was considered, you know, so obscene for the fact that, like, you see Megan, like, touching herself and you see Megan and Graham having sex. Nothing explicit, but no. Just it's clear that the characters are, it's clear what the characters are doing.
So the article that I read, and I haven't seen that documentary, although now I definitely want to. The article that I read said that when the director, Jamie Babbitt, like, wanted to talk to the Motion Picture Association of America about the rating, and the person that was designated to talk to her about it was like, well, everything is so dark, so we know that terrible things must be happening in the dark. And it's like, she was like, no, actually, like, not much is happening at all, which is why I made it so dark. Do you want me to just lighten it up so that you can see that it's not happening? And then they made her remove every reference from a woman going down on another woman. And then that was what caused them to adjust the rating, which is so sexist and so misogynistic that it's like, it's, how can it be real? But of course it's real.
Of course it's real. Oh my God. Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. That's really something. That's really something.
Yeah. I remember like another film that came out around this time. This is a weird film to compare to, but Sense and Sensibility with Emma Thompson and Hugh Grant. And I remember watching like the director's commentary of that one time. And Emma Thompson said that the studio felt like if that movie got rated G, that it would be the kiss of death because it would be like women in period dresses and a G rating. No one was going to see it. So she had to write a scene where like a man was like swearing loudly. And then they had to like really like talk that up to like the ratings board to get it like a PG-13 or a G rating or whatever. So it wouldn't get a G. And I was just thinking about like what happens in that movie versus what happens in this movie and how like the difference between like a G rating or an NC-17 rating is just like so absurd.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. And that like it's also just interesting from the standpoint of like this movie is making light of something very dark, and yet the things that the ratings board were having problems with are the parts of the movie that are the most joyful. You know? Yeah. Interesting to think about.
Yeah, but I also have to say, I love this movie for launching. I mean, she was already like up and coming, but like the continued queer character work of Clea DuVall. I know you are not the happiest season stan that I am. I wish I could have worked Aubrey Plaza into casting.
For this
exercise. But I'm really grateful that Clea DuVall has had like the career that she's had, and that she's now directing and creating like other opportunities for queer stories. Clea DuVall, I am like, I'm gonna say like 102% sure about this, but you know, there always could be like a magazine article out there somewhere that would prove me wrong. But in my memory, Clea DuVall was not out when this movie came out. And so I just think it was like super amazing of her to like be unafraid of this role.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, another like an early queer role for Natasha Lyonne, who was so good as a queer character.
What made me actually suggest that we do this episode this week was that there's an Actors on Actors that came out recently where Natasha Lyonne is talking to Melanie Lynskey, and they talk a bit about this movie that they were in together back in the day, and how like Natasha Lyonne got cast in this movie because she was like best friends with Clea DuVall, and she was like, the script was on the floor of Clea DuVall's car and Natasha Lyonne was in the passenger seat, and she picked it up and she was like, what's this? And Clea DuVall was like telling her about it. And Natasha Lyonne was like, well, what's my part? And Clea DuVall was like, I don't know if there is one for you. And then Natasha Lyonne looked at it and she was like, who's directing? Take me to her house. And then she cheered for her. She tried to convince her that she could be a cheerleader. And then she was rest is history. And then Melanie Lynskey was like, yeah. And then I got the part because like she and Natasha Lyonne had been in Detroit Rock City together, and so Natasha Lyonne like brought Melanie Lynskey in. And so it was just a really, it was fun hearing them talk about it, and it was also really fun hearing Natasha Lyonne say that like one of the things that really like has drawn her to the queer characters that she has played is that she loves the freedom of playing a woman whose story is not controlled by a man. Like it's not like the narrative is not tied to a man. It's not like being controlled by like, even if it's a strong woman, like just being controlled by like whatever this man's destiny or plan or growth is or whatever. And she said that like she just feels like those roles are like much more freeing, and that even when she is like playing a less queer character, that's kind of what she ideally likes to like write for and play for. Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah, definitely her character in Russian Doll, certainly, even though that's not necessarily a queer character, has that.
Right. Or Poker Face. Yeah. Like,
yeah. Yeah, it's such a fun film. It feels like such a 90s. It's funny because it feels like such a 90s time capsule, and yet it also feels really timeless as well. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's a delight. I think it's a delightful movie.
Totally agree.
Do we have any more we want to say?
I think I've said everything that I have. What about you?
Okay. I think I have too. I would just say, like, if, you know, like, if you want a movie that is fun and campy and a little dark and a little silly and romantic, I think you'll love this movie. I think, you know, I think if you really enjoyed Booksmart, I think you'll really like this movie. I think if you're a fan of Yellow Jackets, I mean, it's definitely a different vibe, but I think you'll like this movie. I think if you're a fan of, you know, the campiness of PLL, you'll like this movie. Yeah, I can't recommend it enough.
Yeah, and if you've seen this movie before, watch it again. Watch the director's cut. There are some scenes that are longer. There's at least one that was taken out. So yeah, give it a rewatch. I super enjoyed having that as part of my week.
Totally. And if you have thoughts on it, if you have thoughts on who you'd cast, we want to hear from you. You can, of course, send us an email at everybodyapodcast@gmail.com. You can check out our Instagram at everybodyapodcast. You can check out our Spotify, everybodyGay. Maybe that'll be a little project for me this week is I'll make a little But I'm a Cheerleader playlist, because there's also really, we didn't talk about it, but there's great music in this movie.
Oh, there is great music. And it like kind of launches like the queer cheerleaders of the future, like Santana. On Glee.
Yeah, 1,000%. Yeah. And yeah, you can leave us a rating and review on iTunes. We'd appreciate it. We will be off next week, but we will be continuing the bonus episode train. If you have thoughts on things you'd like us to talk about, please reach out. And happy end of Pride Month, everybody.
Yeah, I hope you had a great Pride Month. I hope you continue being proud all year long, and have a great rest of your June.
Mm-hmm. Take care.
Bye.